anytime. That was very, very kind, and thank you for your very kind comments and for your very warm and gracious welcome here. I suspect that's rain pounding away. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk until the rain stops. How's that? I don't get a chance to speak in front of 2,000 people very often, so I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. You notice how I struck the rain harder when I said that? So I think someone's trying to encourage me here. That's the way I take that. Thank you for being here. On so many levels, thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting Southwest Indiana according to life. That, of course, goes to the boy who's really encouraging me. Thank you for supporting Right to Life. Thank you for standing up for what you believe in and coming here. And thank you for encouraging each other by being here. And thank you for encouraging all of the people of the Right to Life movement by being here. And particularly, thank you for encouraging me. When I look out across this huge venue and see all of these lovers of life, I am very much encouraged about the future of our country, because I absolutely believe that if America is not a country that stands up and defends the dignity of every human life, if we do not stand shoulder to shoulder with God's children, then how can we as a country get down on our knees and ask for His blessing and expect it to be good? You are doing the Lord's work for our country by fighting for that right that our founders put first for a reason in the Declaration of Independence. They could have written liberty, life, and the pursuit of happiness, or happiness, life, and liberty, but they didn't, because it wouldn't have made sense. The foundational right upon which the others build is life. None other, no other right matters if you're not here to exercise it. And so what you are here tonight robustly communicating is that you are not going to go away. I spoke at the Right to Life March in Washington, D.C. in January. 750,000 people. You didn't read that in any of the newspapers or see that in any of the reports on the media, in the media. 750,000 people, after 40 years of Roe versus Wade, they were writing the epitaph of the pro-life movement. It's going to go away. It did not. Why? Because truth never goes away. You stand for truth. You stand for the real truth that at the moment of conception, that thing in the womb, it's not a blob of tissue, as the abortion industry is trying to lie to us. It is human life. It should feel good that every force that can be waged against us, the educational establishment, the media, the popular culture, every avenue of power, the Supreme Court, the federal government, state governments, have been waging a battle to hide the truth and force upon the American public this great lie of abortion. And yet here we are, 40 years later. Time Magazine, you may have seen the cover, lamented just a few months ago, 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. Why haven't we won? The reason I start with this speech is because I want you to feel encouraged by what's happening. Because you know what? There's a lot to be discouraged about in America today. There's a lot to be discouraged about in the pro-life movement. The fact that it's been 40 years and here we are. We haven't made the progress we wanted. But we have withstood onslaught that no other movement has been able to withstand. You should feel good about the state of play in America. Do you know, if you look and survey young people today, they are the most pro-life of generations. They are the most pro-life generations. There was a sea change over the past 10, 15 years on the issue of abortion. Driven by the pro-life movement, by organizations like Right to Life here in Indiana. And now, as you heard from Mary Ellen, beginning to go on the offensive. Doesn't it feel good to start to go on the offensive? When I came into Congress back in 1990s, which we talked about, we were not on the offensive. I ran, as Richard said, as a pro-life. But I had committed never to talk about it. I just didn't talk about it. Because there was a heavy price to pay. I was from a Democratic district. I defeated an incumbent. They were putting another incumbent up against me in 2 years thanks to the district. Then I ran for the Senate, same thing. I was up against a Democratic incumbent in the state of Pennsylvania, hardly a blue state, red state. And so I was pro-life. But I never said a word in the 4 years of the House of Representatives on the issue of abortion. Came to the Senate and pledged to myself I would never, ever, I'd work behind the scenes. But I wouldn't do that. This is political suicide. And as Richard mentioned, this issue of partial birth abortion. Remember hearing it first described, I couldn't believe it was true. I don't know why I couldn't believe it was true. After listening to the testimony, reading the testimony of what was going on in Philadelphia, in the trial of, I hate to use the term, Dr. Gaza, shouldn't have surprised me that things like that were going on in the abortion bills in this country, but it did shock me. And I finally realized that all I was doing was perpetuating the dirty little secret because I wasn't willing to make the sacrifice. So I did something I never thought I would do. I actually went out and spoke on the issue of abortion. 6 months later, I was managing the bill overriding the president's veto. President Clinton vetoed that bill to ban partial birth abortion. And I ended up, September 1996, overriding that, trying to override that bill. I guess the rest is history. I needed a lot of encouragement because I knew we weren't going to win. I knew it was going to hurt me politically. But yet I just felt compelled to do it. I felt moved to do it. I prayed a lot about it. I felt this is what God was calling me to do. Even though I can tell you I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to take that risk. I didn't want to put my career on the line. For a bill I was going to lose anyway. I went out there and did. God blessed me. I'll never forget one of the first debates I had. It was describing what was going on with this partial birth abortion procedure. There was a chart that showed the procedure. One of the senators earlier in the day had likened the procedure to an appendectomy. It was a bloody medical procedure. If you described any medical procedure, it would be gruesome. Another senator got up and talked about how women who were standing outside of the room, Senate chamber, lobbying senators as they came in to vote against the bill. These were women who had had partial birth abortions, and she said they were crying. This was Senator Box from California. Said they were crying because I wanted to take away an option, and I didn't understand. So I got up and I said, the Senator from California said that these women were crying. I said, we would be deafened by the cries of the babies who are not here to cry because of this procedure. And then I pointed to that diagram and I said, another senator likened this procedure to an appendectomy. I said, this is not appendix. Pointing to the baby. I said, it's a baby. It's a baby. At that very moment, the cry of a baby could be heard in the United States Senate. A cry could be heard of a baby. Now, why that's miraculous is that babies aren't allowed in the United States Senate. You have to be 7 years of age to be in the gallery of the United States Senate. I served in the Senate for 12 years and I never heard another baby cry. But at that very moment, I believe God sent a message to the United States Senate through this imperfect, very frightened vessel standing on the Senate floor. I say that to you again to encourage you. You heard example after example. I hope you understand how brilliant this program was tonight prior to this speech. The people that came up, one after another, exhibited to you the artist, the writer, the businessman, the soldier. Ordinary, average people doing their job, pursuing their passion, but doing it in a way that give glory to Him and standing up for truth. People ask me all the time, what can I do, Senator? Every day. Every day. Commit yourself in everything you do to make a difference for life. You heard Caitlin talk about 3,000, almost 4,000 abortions a day. One of my favorite sayings is, every day we get up and we tell ourselves lies so we can live. And we have convinced ourselves here, even in the pro-life movement, even of those who are passionate and active, even me, that we can't make a difference. That's a lie. This country's changing, ladies and gentlemen. We know it. We see it. We've seen it dramatically so in the last few weeks. Unsettling, isn't it? Saw it from the last election. People scratch their head and say, how could that have happened? What's going on in this country? We have a president who says he wants to transform America. And he's winning. He's got lots of friends. Powerful places. All of those institutions I talked about earlier. Media. The media who lies for things that they care about. Who hides truth if it hurts their cause. Who supports lies if it helps their cause. You see it. Obamacare. The audacity of the President of the United States yesterday to talk about people in the gun lobby lying about what the bill was about. Read your Obamacare bill, Mr. President, and stop lying about it.
Powerful array of forces
history of the world, the British military, the most powerful army and navy the world had ever seen. The vast majority of the business people in America were loyalists. The big business paying their tribute to those who took care of them, not unlike today. How did we win that battle? If you'd have gone early in 1776 and gone to the state of Pennsylvania or Massachusetts or Georgia and asked Georgia to Pennsylvania, a New Englander, what were you fighting for? You probably would have gotten three different answers, maybe four. But then a group of people gathered together in Philadelphia and they etched out this thing called the Declaration of Independence. And this declaration laid out for America its soul. Four times God is mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. At the heart of it is that phrase we all know, we hold these truths, terms, to be self-evident. For those of us who say, oh, for those of us who say, oh, you know, these old guys who wrote this stuff, they know what they were talking about. They were talking about self-evident truth, available to everybody. That all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights among the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. People ask me, what are we trying to get back to? What's your vision for the future? That. It really comes to that. It's who we are. We're a country that is based on God-given rights. God-given rights. Rights don't come from the government. They don't come from the president or from the Supreme Court. They come from God.
America has been.
And the reason they are winning is because every single day they fight. They take nothing for granted. They take no prisoners. If you are out of their orthodoxy, they condemn you. They go after you. They try to destroy you. Because they believe what they are doing is right. And they're willing to risk it all. If you learn anything from human history, look at what can be done with a small group of committed people who want to make a difference. Every day we get up and we tell ourselves lies so we can live. You can live with 4,000 children dying every day. You've convinced yourself that there's just nothing I can do about it. I better go to work. Yeah, go to work and make a difference. Oh, I can't talk about this with my friends. It'll be uncomfortable. You ask why we lose. I can't give more money to an organization like this or to political candidates who agree with me, because then I won't be able to fill in the blank. The other side defers their gratification. They'd rather see the transformation. I say this to you not to point fingers at people in this room. Obviously, in many respects, I was speaking to the choir here. People who do care. You wouldn't be here if you didn't care. But this idea that things are just going to swing back, because it always swings back. Do you really believe that anymore? They're not going to give up. If you look at the history of the great civilizations, they have something on their side, even more corrosive to America than all of the assets I talked about that they have in their quiver. Every great civilization has been unable to stand the test of one thing. It's corrosive. Why is it corrosive? Because the farther away you get from the passion that made what America is, the more comfortable people get, and things are just going to go along and be the way they are. The more we just sit and think, it'll change. You can make a difference. God called you here tonight. He called you here. These men and women. And even you, me. He called you because He has a purpose for you. And you know what? I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just to pray more. Hopefully it's for everyone to pray more. Maybe it's to do something. Is to give something. Look at the examples here tonight. Plenty of examples of how you can apply this passion. Agitate, whether it's in politics, whether it's in protesting, whether it's in prayers, whether it's in the pro-life movement at pregnancy centers, or prayers at abortion clinics. Whatever it is, do it. Do it. Can't wait. Let me assure you a couple of things. Number one,